all the madness, the horrors, the absolute insanity. How could you have unleashed something so vile and disturbing? It's the Jason Wilkins Factory Podcast.
Welcome to the big leagues.
Yeah.
Welcome to the big leagues.
Here we are. So we are episode two of the Jason Wilkins Factory Podcast, formerly known as the Art Burrito. I'm only going to say that maybe two more times and then we'll finish that. Because we did have a few listeners from my previous podcast. Yeah, which was weird because it was not awesome. But anyway, so on the big show today, we have Kevin Gallagher, a.k.a. Art of Spy Poet.
Either or.
Well, you should say it because of your Instagram.
It's the Art of Spy Poet. That's
there we go.
My Instagram handle.
Yep.
And that just comes from years and years ago. Spy Poet just was the coolest email thing I could find, and it became my gamer tag. And so
yeah,
it just
sort of
became the online identity.
Yeah, that's cool. And one of the founding members of the Peterborough Arts Collective.
I think that's maybe a little generous, but I'll take it.
I think so. Yeah, I think so. We're coming up to a whole year. Well, we were...
You're our founder, but I would say that I stole your baby, and I'm running with it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like I said, I've said it to you before. It's something that I always wanted to do, but I never really had the... I'm not big enough. I don't have the sort of name recognition to sort of... pull people in and say, like, hey, here's this thing that I want to do.
It's been cool, though.
So, and, yeah, the growth has been
yeah
really good, and the people we've been pulling in, and I have some more people to talk to you about later.
Yeah,
and
good.
Yeah.
Yeah, Hannah was just here picking up her work.
We're going to be doing a collaboration on the weekend, actually.
Good.
Yeah.
Oh, man, she's good.
She's so talented.
Yeah.
Like, just
she came and picked up her pieces, and then now the wall's empty. Because she has some giant ones in there.
So, yeah, while we're on the podcast, go check her out, Hannah Spinney Art.
Yeah.
On Instagram. Once you see the very dark brooding awesomely talented paintings, you'll know you're in the right place.
Well, yeah, we're lucky. Like when I opened it up, and we are a year coming up in December showing live together, but I started it before that. It didn't really have legs until we actually met.
This big weird thing happened to the world for like a year or two,
right?
To sort of,
which is why
slow it down.
Exactly, which is why the podcast.
And I was one of those people sending you emails, going, "Why doesn't this guy email me back?"
you are one of many still.
Now I just tell people to send me messages.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
stop trying to get a hold of him.
No,
talk
no, no.
To me.
Just leave me alone.
But
I'll do it.
But you know what? I really appreciate that. That's like one of the things where sometimes I'm afraid of, or at least at the beginning was afraid of, like maybe stepping on your toes. But you have, can I swear?
Mm-hmm.
Zero fucking ego about it, and that's the most wonderful thing about it is. Your lack of egotistical attachment to the project is so essential to where it's going, and has allowed me to do what I do and just run with the ball instead of constantly like second guessing, going like, do I need approval for this? Or I just keep pulling people in and you keep accepting it, and we're growing and changing and mm-hmm. evolving and and because of the Arts Collective, I have forced myself through a level of personal growth that I was putting off in my own life.
Mm.
And because I suddenly became part of something that was a little bigger than myself, and I went like, I gotta get my shit together.
We all say that at some point, that's for sure.
But I think, I mean, a year ago, in terms of how I reacted to certain things, I would think that hopefully there's been a noticeable difference in terms of
mm-hmm.
I've changed a lot over the past year.
You seem lighter.
Yeah.
Seem lighter. Like you. Yeah, for sure. Like maybe things aren't weighing on you.
It's meditation every day.
Yeah.
That's a big thing. But also just acceptance of being autistic
mm-hmm.
and being one of the autistic people out there who a lot of people say, you're not autistic.
Mm.
Like, I am, but I do a lot of fucking work to be able to function. And part of that work is the art.
Mm-hmm.
Like art is not a, it's not a hobby for mm-hmm. me. It's not a career for me. It is a necessary function for me to be able to interact with society. If I don't do art, I'm a mess. I fall apart. My art is a meditative process through which I ruminate over things going on in my life. I then use that to then write. I write every day. I make art every day. It's my life, and it has to be.
Keeps you on track. Keeps you moving forward.
That's when I'm more prone to like having literal meltdowns, not having my head straight, like. Mm. And I'm late diagnosed. So I was diagnosed about 10 years ago, and I was diagnosed with autism. And I have what's called a nonverbal learning disability. So this means that my brain does not process nonverbal forms of communication. So body language, it goes nowhere with me. One-on-one, I can focus on you. It's easy, but unlike most people, I have to dedicate part of my conscious brain to what is your body language telling me? And if I'm in a place where that's harder to focus on, in larger groups where it becomes harder to focus on individual speakers, that can be a real challenge for me.
Mm-hmm.
So I got in a lot of trouble, especially in my youth, not knowing that I had this difference, and I would piss people off. I'd just keep talking, and people would do all the things, you know, like scrunch their arms up or like do all these things to try to communicate to me without words that I was going down a dangerous path, perhaps, and I got in a lot of trouble.
Because you couldn't read those cues.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's the social aspect. So, and then my power, that's the way I always term autism is autism. You come with a superpower. You're born with a superpower, and that's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
But with that power comes your weakness, just like a superhero, like you, mm-hmm. you know, you yeah. have your weakness. So my weakness is body language, but in terms of my communication with words and verbal language, I'm usually a very articulate person.
Yeah.
I write well. My writing is very well received. I tend to be able to just, I intuitively put together sentence structure, paragraph structure. I don't necessarily know that I'm doing it. I just do it properly, intuitively. I was always reading at a very, very high level. So like my memory and recall when I read or write things down is in the like vastly superior range.
Yeah.
But again, there are those deficits that can make things difficult.
So. Yeah. When I'm actually in January, I'm going to start again, but Autism Ontario approached me to teach a virtual class for kids. And I learned a ton. And it was usually, I think the kids were like 10 to, yeah, they were like 10 to 18. So it was pretty wide group of kids as far as age group. And they were awesome. Like, we would jump on first thing and they'd update me on their favorite movie, sort of very specific details. Like, so they would know the ins and outs of, you know, their favorite movie. They would quiz me. So if I said, for example, you know, I love Back to the Future, but someone in the group knew it well, I was in trouble.
Oh yeah.
Because there's no way
you don't want to get into a conversation with me about Star Wars.
No, cause I could not read. Yeah. Especially not Star Wars, but I cannot. I don't have the recall. I can't just. I know I love the movie. There's certain pieces I'll remember and I can talk about, but I don't have that.
Like, you're in extra special trouble if it's that particular person's special interest.
Yeah.
So for a long time for me, Star Wars was a special interest. I own 200 Star Wars books, read them all, and so when they changed all of that, I got very upset.
Yeah.
But. That was my special interest for a long time. I played the role-playing game. I read the novels, the movies, like just a ridiculously intimate knowledge. I can still espouse about it for forever, so we're not allowed to talk about that.
Yeah.
But I know what you mean. Like, it's was just going to say, though, about the, I'm sure in that group of kids, like, you see a lot of different skills that are presented. And autism, in terms of publicly, is seen a lot as, like, they don't know how to speak. They have meltdowns and temper, like, and that's just not how it is. Mm-hmm. I mean, do those things happen? Sure.
Yeah.
Is that the sole presenting thing of autism? No, not by a long shot. There are people who are autistic who, I mean, like, people live full, rich lives. Autism is a spectrum, right? There's no, it's just different. Like, there's a lot of high functioning, low functioning. You'll get into a lot of trouble if you start talking about stuff like that. Like,
but when I was teaching them, I would see those things, like, present themselves for sure. Like, I never saw it from day one. I never would pull anything and say, you know, that's a weakness. They're so smart. They're funny. Attention to detail is crazy. Some of them would jump on and speak. Like, they would have tons of questions for me. Others would kind of sit back, but then they would show their art, and I'd be like, you've got to be kidding me.
Yeah.
They wouldn't speak too much, but, man, could they draw? Or, like, you know, they would start quizzing me on things as they were drawing. And, like, it was just this cool experience. And then I went from that to doing a mural at an autism center that's opening in Toronto. So it's the weird how this, all of a sudden I'm going down this path and I'm learning, you know, about colors and shapes for autistic kids.
And I mean, I would just love to be involved in any way with this type of stuff. Cause to me, it would be a learning experience too.
Yeah.
I am woefully undereducated in, you know, my own in my own neurodiversity. So, like, I'm ADHD autistic, and, words being my focus. Like, I mean, I was writing, like, Batman, like, full Batman stories and stuff when I was in, like, grade 5. Like, I would just fill up journals, and I was one of these people, like, largely told by teachers, like, oh, he's got all this potential, he's not meeting his potential. And I learned a long time ago that that typically means, when a teacher says that, it's they don't know how to teach you.
Yeah.
And that's the big thing with autism, is we don't tend to learn in the typical ways. I was someone, like, I wouldn't do anything for tests or whatever, and, like, the night before a test, I just, like, read through some stuff I'm unsure of, maybe write a couple things down, boom, ace it, move on. But holding my interest to that point, like, for me, like, doing the semester system, 4 subjects a day for 5 months, fucking shoot me.
Yeah.
Just be done with it. You give me a 2-year course in 6 months, I will crush it.
Yeah.
I will crush it. That's how I function. I learned that, like, procrastinating for me was, like, literally putting me in almost my best environment in terms of, like, that just works for me.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
I used to get, if Jason would apply himself.
Yeah. Yeah.
But what that was my brain was always thinking about what I'm going to draw. Like, seriously, that's all I would do, is think about, if I was in math or science or whatever, I'd be like, how can I draw that? Or what can I do? Or we would pass, we would do these comics in science. So I'd start a drawing, you pass it to my friend, he would continue the drawing back and forth. I could not.
I did that with poetry.
Really? That's cool. I could not
in
focus.
In my early teens. And
yeah. There is no one size fits all. I mean, especially now, there's as you know, things progress, and I think that's a good evolution of learning or of teaching. I think it has come a long way, whereas before, especially in our day,
I see that in terms of just my involvement in creating space. When I'm there on Thursday afternoons doing the art drop-ins, and I see kids in early high school, and it's such a different dynamic.
Yeah.
In terms of people that I know in my time in high school would have been ostracized and shunned are kind of the cool kids now.
It's so true.
It's really
it
neat.
Has
it's
been
such a great shift.
It is a wicked shift, because
in terms of, like, gender and sexuality,
man,
and learning abilities, like, it's a vastly different thing, and it's wonderful.
Well, to be an artist now, it's cool. When I was in high school, it was not.
how am I like now the cool old guy because I know all these things about like role playing games.
Yeah.
And like yeah.
So by luck of the draw, you know.
Yeah.
We're cool. it could have gone the other way.
I remember that when my niece, who's now, oh my God, pushing 30, she just turned 28 a few days ago. And I remember I went to see like the Star Wars prequels with her. And she was just so lit up. And that's why I got attached to those, because I saw, oh, this is doing to my niece what those original movies did to me.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, I was like, your uncle's so cool. He knows everything about Yoda. Oh, my God.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
I knew all of this history, right? All these things that the movies weren't telling you.
And yeah.
Yeah. So I just became this sort of like uncle Star Wars guru.
That's awesome. So listen, like, obviously, I mean, your work is super intricate. So when you're doing your thing on a daily basis, like what is your creative approach? Like, see, for me, if I'm presented with a job from a client, I can almost, and I'm given like a brief, right? I can almost see it in front of me. Like I can almost see how it's weird. Like you can almost see it, present itself. Right. And then you go ahead and start drawing. Is it similar for you?
Sometimes.
Yeah.
Sometimes for me, it's about putting a single shape on a page.
Yeah.
And then just building out from there. And then I'll just stop, put it aside, maybe write a bit, do something else. My mind will say, hey, what if you did this? I've got a piece at home right now. It's a larger piece, like the size of the Oddities piece.
Right.
And I put letters down. In fact, it's the banner that we had on the ceiling for the Glow Show. It's that.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So joy is inevitable when you chase the light. Yeah. So yeah. It's that.
That was up there for a while. The kids loved it.
And that's part of my reason of doing this is I'm creating a piece around that. Like, that's my statement. And in many ways, that's my approach to art. You're a grinder, and I really admire that about you, but I am not. In some ways,
well,
I'm just persistent, yeah. and knowing that, like, if you build it, they will come. And it's I've been working on this stuff a long time. There's a real change in my art as well in the past year. And like a lot of that is doing themed shows, mm-hmm. trying to stretch into different spaces, talking to people about what they like and what they don't like. But sorry, I wander off, but, the process for me is, it can be really different. I did a logo. I did the logo for Otana Beats Radio here in Peterborough. You can find them on Instagram as well. Mm-hmm. They're fantastic people, and amazing DJs, and they throw some great parties. I'm a dancing fool, so I love doing that. But designing their logo was saying, like, okay, what do you want me to incorporate? And so it was like, well, we're called Otana Beats. We're named after the Otonabee River. So we want some sort of these elements in it. Mm-hmm. And so I took that and I went, okay, so what can I do with that? And so I found, I looked up symbols for water and looked up symbols around the Otonabee River and I'm probably crucifying the pronunciation, but the Anishinaabe Indians are native.
I think that's right.
And like there's a
no, that's cool.
Flubbed some words there, and I always hate doing that.
No, but,
So I looked up some indigenous symbols. So I used a triangle. Which is a magic symbol, like a white magic symbol for water. I use just the indigenous symbol for water, which is basically what you would think it would be, or at least one that I found, which is just sort of the waves. And then there were three people involved in Otana Beats. And so I sort of added these like three figures and then like a stylized font and put it all in a circle that's sort of like, okay, this is like a record, but it's also... it also sort of, I stylized it. I wanted it to look like the big circle on the front of a jukebox.
Right.
Yeah, that's it there at the top. If you scroll down there, there will be like an actual image of it. It shouldn't be too far down. But if you keep going, there it is.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So I wanted three figures, but I wanted them to be not specific to like any gender or whatever. And I wanted it black and white because I look at this as going like, you can now use that image digitally and color it for whatever events you want.
Yeah.
I also have designs and plans on posters, potentially moving forward. If they want to tap me for that, but it's using those three little figures as almost like caricatures in posters.
And that's still definitely in your style. It's just scaled back a little bit, right? Just so that the logo is incorporated, obviously.
And I think that's something I really like about I am not a brooding, self-hating artist. I fucking love my art.
Yeah.
95%, if I say I don't like a piece of art and people come down on me, like, just go away. 95% of what I do, I absolutely love and have trouble understanding why other people don't love it more.
They do, though. You've seen people at the shows. It's crazy, man.
Yeah. As I said, I'm not being defeatist in any way. I really like my art. Sometimes it's interesting to me where I'll create something, oh, this is my favorite thing.
Yeah.
And it will have like sort of lesser engagement. And sometimes I create something and I go, oh, I don't like that. And people are like, I love it. I'm like, it's so interesting to me, like the difference. And
I do that too. I'll put stuff out there and you get surprised, like, oh, okay. But that's also a good indicator.
Oh,
like,
I thought this was a fuck up. And here it is. Like, people are just falling over themselves to get out.
But from a commercial art standpoint, I take that almost as a cue to be like, oh, well, maybe I should explore that a little bit. Or try that. People are digging it.
And right? I've done that too. Like, so the piece you bought from me with like the hexagons that I turned into to cubes and whatever, that was like the first piece I did. Like, I use a lot of...
Thanks, Nick.
So, I don't know. Is this seeable? Visible?
I think they should. Yeah, they should be able to see it.
It's a little shiny, but just the idea of like all those very.
I wanted it because it was like Q-Bert, remember?
Yep, and yeah, and of course it's named after that, right? It's Q-Bert's trip.
Yeah.
But I use a lot of like circles are big for me. Circles, rounded shapes.
Yeah.
And so I got a lot of great comments when I started to use like the hexagons. Because it's a great contrast to have those like big, smooth, rounded shapes, and they are very contrasted by like hexagonal patterns. And so that was like, that's a real appeal. And so I lean into that, and then I start to use those shapes more and more.
Okay, cool. So being an autistic artist, like, what, I guess you don't know because you only know what you know. I mean, what do you find, there's any barriers when you're like trying to approach an idea or something, or do you find
that I let the idea come to the art as I'm making it?
I
so much of the time I'm not going in with a pre-planned idea.
Yeah,
it is largely intuitive. There are some pieces, so there was one piece I pointed out to you, Nick, the man behind the madness. Go up a little bit. It's one of the black and white ones. Okay, it's there on the right. That one, yeah. So this piece I had, and I put down a couple of shapes, and then I went, okay, immediately, now I have a concrete idea of what I'm going to do, and that is a scarab. So that, to me, is like, it's a representative of a scarab beetle.
You can see that for sure.
Yeah. So, and however people want to interpret where that shape is, cool. I see mine.
It's the middle.
And some people sort of have like a different idea of how the scarab is formed, and that always interests me. I did things years and years ago where I would do a lot of stuff like I'd use water soluble ink and then like push ink around on the page, literally lick my finger and just like I used a Pilot P500. And I would just push the ink around on the page and I would just have things appear and people would tell me and then what they were seeing. And then I would sort of like lean into that.
There's the glow show. Yeah.
Yep.
That's cool.
So I mean, so the top on the middle left beside the block of text there, the sort of creamy colored one.
Oh
there.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I had this piece has great traction, and this whole piece is one giant clusterfuck. I was trying things and I screwed up everything and just kept going with it. And that's something I've learned along what the type of art that I'm creating. Sometimes I can be halfway through that piece of art and go, oh God, I don't like this.
Yeah.
But I always just finish it anyway.
But sometimes there's things that like,
I always finish it anyway because somebody else will appreciate it.
Yeah, exactly.
Somebody else will want it. I don't have to appreciate the art that I'm making. Somebody will.
Yeah,
I'm creating this, and especially the way I create, and I've put it this way. Now this is lifted from somebody else, and that is, we aren't responsible for what we're creating. We're only a conduit, and this is sort of the spirituality of art for me. When the muse wants to come and dance and says, "I want to create something," you better be ready to fucking dance.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you keep refusing the muse, when the muse wants to dance and she wants to do something, you do it. It doesn't matter what it is. It doesn't matter if it's something like, go out of your comfort. Just go where the muse wants to take you. Dance the dance the muse wants to dance. Because if you keep refusing the muse will go find another partner.
Yeah.
The muse will go find another conduit. And you will be left alone wondering where your art went.
Yeah.
And that happened to me. I tried to, even with my writing and my art, I tried to force it into being more acceptable. I tried to make it squeeze into a box. And I spent a couple of years where I was very blocked. And that sort of, my life fell apart. And I never connected those things. I thought, oh, I'm not doing these things because my life fell apart. It's no, my life fell apart because I wasn't doing these things anymore.
See, that's when things started to gain traction for me, was when I started just being like, fuck it, like, this is crazy. I'm trying to be other people. It doesn't make any sense. I'm just going to start doing whatever I want to do. And then that's when, because when you believe in something, other people are going to believe it.
My writing is more valid when it's me being me. If I'm trying to fit into an acceptable style to be published or to be like, I can do those things.
Yeah.
But my best writing is when I just write what I write. It's half poetry. It's half journal. It is what it is. But when people read my writing, it really tends to resonate and connect with people. It's a comment I get from basically everybody in PAC. When I write something, I helped M with some stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I helped a friend recently who had like written a poem for her brother, and she just said something doesn't feel right. And so I went down it and I edited and sort of reworked it a little bit. And I said, you know, this is what it's about. It's all about flow. I can read it and just go, this has too many syllables in this line. And so let's just cut out a word here. And it's just very intuitive. And I did it in like, I do it extremely quickly.
So that's your superpower right there.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, I'm more than happy to help with that stuff.
Oh yeah, you jump in all the time. I mean, for as far as PAC goes, I mean, some of our best stuff has come about because of the contributions you've made, right?
Thank you.
It's 100% true. I mean, we've got
I try sometimes. I'm just like, shut up, let people get in there, because I'm,
but you got to be noisy.
I'm an engine of ideas. Like that's what I've always been.
Yeah.
If you get me in a room with people who are like sharing ideas,
mm-hmm.
I feed off that. That is what I do. I'm a creative juggernaut, and I'm not afraid to say it. Like, mm-hmm. if you start brainstorming in a room, your genius is just gonna feed me. I'm gonna gobble it up like, I'm going to use it. I'm going to take it. I'm going to come up with like modified ideas. I'm going to take your ideas and run with them. I'm going to come up with my own, try and interlock these things.
Yeah, that was a good one. because that was, you collaborated with
Brogan
on that.
He did all the heavy lifting on that.
But still.
Well, I'm just being honest. Like, he did all the font.
Yeah. But you guys came together on that. It looks good.
He did the outside. He did the lettering on the outside, the scrolls, mm-hmm. the lettering. He did the tentacle up the side. I did that like stained glass sort of web background.
Yeah.
Which is sort of like it's almost like a pattern style that I repeat. It's never the same, but I use that a lot. It's like a stained glass spider web.
At the Glow Show, though, that was fucking phenomenal. Your stuff was like jumping off the wall. People were coming up and were like, what?
Well, I mean, that gets into like more of my history as well. I mean, I'm an old school rave kid. I still do it to this day. I love house music. I love dancing. I love stomping the floor, and my art is very geared towards people who like altered states. A lot of my art, like, it's very trippy stuff. It's meant to be its own brand of psychedelia.
There it is there.
Yeah, that top piece. That's one of my personal favorites. I don't know if I'll ever get rid of it, especially after I noticed that it did that, because I had no idea that it did that under blacklight when I originally created it.
See, at our PAC shows, like, again, because of your contributions and the way things have kind of gelled as a whole with the group, we've gone to this point where we're bringing an experience to everybody, which is really, really cool. I had another artist in town, an illustrator friend, and she was saying,
excuse me,
she said at the Oddity show, we were chatting, and she's from Queen West, and, you know, she moved here, I don't know how long ago, but
that's my old stomping grounds.
Yeah, so she said what we put on in the Oddity show felt very...
a directed experience.
Very Queen West, very, you know, hip and cool and fun, and that's what we were hoping to bring with these things, right? An experience,
exactly.
Not just, you don't just slap art in the wall. Let's get people engaged and involved and enjoying themselves and having fun, right? That's how it should be.
And so, and I was just discussing this with Nick again. Kudos to you, sir, the man behind the madness over there.
What up? He's over there behind the light.
My solo show is coming up. When I left here that day, I had some little happy tears. Just in terms of, I very much wanted to put somebody else in, like, hey, first show, like, go at it. And everybody just sort of turned at me and said,
I knew you were going to,
this is all you.
No,
so
yeah,
that to me was a group of people that I've been working with.
Yeah.
Turning to me and saying, we accept you and we love, and we see what you've been doing.
Yeah, man.
And
yeah, man.
See, I like, ah, fuck. It gets me. I like, because I feel like I'm finally arriving somewhere where I've been trying to get to for a long time. So
that makes me happy.
And this is what the Flying Mind is going to be about. So in exactly what we were just talking about, that is the most basic bitch poster I've ever put together. It's just a stock image. But
well,
whatever.
That's pretty funny, because I looked at that. I was like, that looks good. That looks pretty cool. You mean the brain and the wings?
Yeah.
Oh, it's awesome.
Just,
I love it.
Just a stocking, but whatever. It's just because I want.
It works.
I don't want to focus 3 days on doing a poster. I want to focus on the content of the show. So
yeah,
this show is meant to be an event. I'm ready. Everything's framed. I've done handwritten poems that I put into frames that go alongside pieces of art that I've created, which is something I've been doing more lately. Formerly, like I'm showing pieces I've never shown outside of my own home before. I'm bringing stuff that I did 20 years ago. I'm bringing stuff that I did 10 years ago. So we're going to have a little bit of a journey. Some of those pieces from like 2003 that I'm bringing
are just
giant poems upon poems, like on like 11 by 14 pieces of paper, just ripped right out of journals. And some of it, there's a lot of newer stuff, where if you just look at my art, a lot of the times the captions under my art, especially more recently, it comes with companion poems. So yeah, underneath that skull piece, there's a chain of comments by me that is like a continual, it was something I was going to read at the Oddity show and I didn't. I kind of chickened out.
It was also kind of chaotic.
A little bit. But yeah.
In a good way.
But there's a large piece of writing that goes with that, and it talks a lot about what we're talking about today. I mean, when I was a kid, my parents were very sports-centered people, and I definitely was not understood by my parents. I'm still not. I'm lucky enough to still have them around. My parents were very sports-centered people. I am a very creative person, and I was involved in a lot of sports when I was younger. I left those things. I never really fully completed high school, but lied my way through college. I've had a very interesting life. And I really could have gone a different way. I could quite easily be in jail, dead. Like I went through a lot of the system, in terms of I got in fights all the time due to lack of understanding and all that stuff. Like all of these, it's interesting because when I was diagnosed and learning about my nonverbal learning disability and my autism is looking back like every big bad incident in my life, I could look back and go, this is all because of this. Like everything that has gone wrong is it's all in a chain, and it's all a failing of having the systems in place for me that make me a viable social human.
So how did you, so at what point were you like, Hey, like, let's just start. Let's get this shit together.
Whippy psychiatric. So I was a very young man. I think I was in like grade 8, early grade 9. And what I did was, looking back on things, what I did was mask. I hid. I just hid what was going on. And eventually I blew up. I was already in a school where it was small focus classrooms, social worker, teacher, and this was like the second time I had been expelled from grade school for just continuous altercations, fighting. We lived in Toronto. We moved out of Toronto, and that was a move by my parents for many reasons, but one of those reasons was, do we want our kids going to high school in East York?
Right.
I grew up in East York, like right near East York Collegiate, not exactly the best of areas. I had incidents all through school.
So was art at that time an outlet?
No.
No.
No. I started to discover art and writing in like grade 6 and 7, but I didn't really realize how important it was. I mean, like I was a kid, right?
Yeah.
So I had a few of those things in place, but not in any consistent level. It was just more, I would get lost in comics and I would draw like Superman pictures and stuff like that. Obviously I didn't realize how important it was to how I function. I played sports, I played basketball and volleyball and cross country skiing, downhill skiing, et cetera, et cetera. But there was a very big bad incident, and I have no other words for it other than I went batshit, and I got into a gigantic fight with a classmate, and these things happened, and basically I was too young to be taken anywhere other than a mental institution, and so I was taken to Whitby Psych, where I was there for 6 or 8 weeks, but they ran me through a gamut of tests. They had literally on a treadmill, wires in my head.
Oh my God.
And there was always, I always got the same thing from social workers, psychologists, psychiatrists at that time, is that there's something going on with you. We don't know what it is. They desperately tried to find out what it is, but they never did.
How old do you think you were?
At that time, I was beginning of grade 9. So,
okay. So,
like, we're talking like 89, 90.
So, identifying autism.
So, like, 12
autism,
years old and stuff like that.
Identifying autism, what, like...
It was in its infancy. And in fact, so when I look at things, like when I look back at the first papers that were written on NLD, nonverbal learning disability, they were being, the very first papers about that were being published as I was being put in Whippy Psych. So, like, these, unless you had somebody who was sitting looking at the absolute newest information coming out, which, let's face it, you're sitting in a job, in an institution, you're dealing with people, you're not reading all of the new material right up front. So it was basically unknown. I don't put any faults on the system.
Yeah.
But I don't put a lot of faults on me, but there was a lot of, I came from a very dark place, and I was, when I went through Whitby, I just went, there's no way. I'm not coming back here. I'm not going into places like this. And again, I just kind of learned to hide. I, in my writing, I have a lot of different personas that I've used over the years. And that persona is what I call the chameleon. And that is just part of my nonverbal learning disability, is I'm very good at discerning accents. I'm very good at throwing accents. I'm very good at mimicking people. I'm good at imitating. And I do that. I'll steal your laugh. If you're the most popular person in a new peer group, I will just unconsciously, and sometimes consciously, I just steal your way of moving. I steal your way of talking. I will steal your inflections, the way that you laugh. Like, these things, I just steal these things to hide in plain sight. So I just become another little lizard sitting on the branch. And that's a very common thing, or at least was a very common thing with autistic people as they grew, and they try and fit into a society that really isn't meant for them.
It makes sense. Makes total sense.
It's masking. It's what I call being the chameleon. And so I did that for a while. And again, I can think, like, didn't have a lot of creative outlets doing that stuff when I was involved in that kind of thing. And around the same time I started smoking pot in my mid-teens, I sort of like fell in with a group of hippies, surprise. But they were all like writing poems and playing guitar and being, you know, brooding teenagers.
Yeah.
And I just glommed onto that. I met one of my best friends for many years. I met him in an English class, and we both tortured our poor English teacher. Just sort of, you know, analyzing poetry and just being like, where I really got pointed out for this, I think, was in early grade 10 in English. And I wasn't living at home. I was like 16 or 17. I lived on the streets. My parents were dealing with their own things. And I was, by all intents and purposes, a crazy child. And so I wound up not being at home at a very young age. And vacillating back and forth between different communities. And I wound up going to high school in Port Perry for a year. And my English teacher there, I was showing up occasionally, and he had an assignment, and I wound up living in this place in a little town called Caesarea, and it's in the middle of nowhere.
Never heard of it. It must be in the middle of nowhere.
It's on like 7A in between like Port Perry and Lindsay. It's even off the highway. Like, you've got to pursue it. It's a tiny little village. And I wound up with this apartment there. I was 17. I shouldn't have even legally had this apartment. But I wound up being there. I was supposed to have people move in with me, but I spent the first like 2 or 3 weeks there completely alone with nothing but a clock radio. And that just spurred my brain into writing, and I never really stopped. That's where I started writing poetry. And that poetry, I wound up giving a bunch of it to my English teacher. and then missed a day and came in and got all these weird looks, and I discovered that he read all of this poetry to the class and just said, like, this is amazing stuff. And I just went, like, whoa. It bothered me in a way, but at the same time I went, like, he's not going to read my stuff to a class because he thinks it's shit.
Yeah, right.
And so that gave me at least some encouragement. And then I fell in with this group of people, and they were all writing songs, writing poetry, et cetera, smoking weed. And so, they were the group that accepted me. That's really it. They were the first group that fully accepted me. I grew up being a geek who played sports. So in the jock world, I was a geek and not to be fully integrated into what they were doing. And the geeks didn't trust me because I played sports.
Right.
So I was always in between. I had like these foots in different feet, in foots.
Yeah.
Foots in different worlds.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And so I never really fit anywhere. And then I found this small group of people, and I moved away from that area. My family moved to just outside of Lindsay, and I guess I was 18 when I wound up moving back in with my parents after being astray for almost 3 years. My parents, who were looking at retirement, then had two kids return home, and then all of a sudden we're raising a grandchild. And I wound up going to school in Lindsay, and then I was so in and out of high school. So I was still going to high school at like 18, 19, and I couldn't make friends in Lindsay. So I just imported my friends from elsewhere and made them move to Lindsay pretty much. Like, they made friends, and then their friends became my friends by default. Like, that is literally how I rolled for a long time. Was just like, I'm in this new place. You should all come here.
And were your parents like always like supportive of your art?
Because they don't understand it.
Right.
Still, they don't.
Right.
My mother's extremely supportive.
But your mom's been here. Point. And she loves it. You can tell. Like, she's pretty impressed by what's going on.
But right? I think it took a while. Mm-hmm. My mom and I had a horrible relationship for years. And a lot of that changed when I got my diagnosis. Mm-hmm. And I sort of explained that stuff. I think my mom went, oh, a lot of this stuff makes sense. And so, and I've had a fantastic relationship with my mom over the past.
No problem.
But yeah, so like, I mean, my mom and I, like, my mom as a 76-year-old woman is so fucking impressive in how progressive she has become.
I know
her acceptance.
How many of us were saying when she walked in here? There's no way she's 76.
Yeah, she doesn't look it. But there's just this other component, like coming to meet me one day, and I'm sitting on a lawn working on a piece of canvas with a myriad group of transgender individuals, like working on an art project, and my mom just jumps right in and is just, I mean. I took my mom to drag bingo a couple of weeks ago, her and two of her friends. Like, I think that's amazing. And I think there's there's a lack of understanding in this world that, like, how different the world they grew up in is from the one socially that exists now.
Oh, it's crazy.
It's so different. The fact that my 76-year-old mom is just like working on her pronouns, and that's fucking amazing. Because there's a lot of people that age that I don't understand.
No,
and they don't try to understand.
Yeah,
and I think if there's an effort to understand these things, just feed into that effort of understanding.
Yeah,
and I say this to all of my. Let's call them kin spirits in the world. Like, I know it's fucking exhausting. Like, as an autistic person, I get it. Cause I get questions and sometimes I'd be like, oh, lean into it, man. It can be exhausting, but if somebody is flexing that effort to understand you and your world and your community, just bite down the tiredness and like lean into it.
And
just
do it. Yeah.
So
wicked.
It's hard.
But we're going to take a break.
Indeed. This is part two of Two Bald Guys with Hats.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, where things are a little fucked up, but we're moving forward and it's good. So I wanted to touch on a little bit about, like, so if I wake up in the morning and I am not feeling 100%, but I still have work to do, there's certain things I can do to kind of bring myself out of that. Like, put on music. I come in here and put on music and, you know, that puts me in a better mood. And then I start working and then it just starts to roll a little bit that way, coming out of whatever funk I'm in. Like, so what, if you're not feeling it one day or you're like, oh man, there's no way I can't do it today. Like, what is it that does it for you?
Right now, in terms of, I have a checklist and a routine every day. And I cannot start a day like that because as soon as I open my eyes and I know that, okay, no more snooze button. This is the start of my day. Mm-hmm. It is immediate start of transcendental meditation. So transcendental meditation is breathing in my purpose for that day, exhaling the things that I don't want. So for instance, today I knew I was coming in to do this. So I began at least 10 minutes. This morning I meditated for probably half an hour before I even got out of my bed. And that was, a lot of the time when I breathe in, the first two words are love and affection, and then connection, effective communication. These are the things I want today because I knew what I was coming in here to do.
Yeah.
And then when I breathe out, I just think evil, wicked, mean, and nasty. Those are all the things I don't want.
That's cool.
So I just exhale, get rid of all those things that I don't want. And, you know, some those words can change on the day, but a lot of the time it's just conflict, animosity.
No time for that.
I don't want that stuff in my life. Mm. Breathe out. Get rid of it. Breathe in. Love, affection, creation, communication. These are the things that I want. Let's breathe these things in. Let's try and draw them towards me. And it fits into sort of how I'm moving through life right now, which is what I call increasing my gravity. And some of that has to do with pack. And so increasing my gravity is, my interpersonal skills right now are really good. I am a good talker. And so when I use my autism like a fucking weapon. So when I get passionate about something, I purposely switched my special interest from different things. Right now, my special interest is art. I'm focused on art. I watch art documentaries. I watch art YouTube videos. I make art every day. And so, like, this just increases my gravity. Doing these things draws more of this towards me. And I wind up getting into a lot of conversations, like finding Hannah, creating space and seeing her art and just saying, you need to be a part of this.
Yeah.
Conversations with Sheldon, conversations with Cody McMahon, aka Yodis, like our in-house, the pack DJ, who I commonly refer to as my DJ. I love that guy. He has so many ideas. He is an underutilized resource, no matter what we're talking about, whether we're talking about the local DJ scene, people who don't have Cody McMahon involved, you don't know what you're missing. Like, he is,
he just jumps in when
he is a creative juggernaut. Like, yeah, exactly like I was saying, like he lives and breathes his art. All he wants to do is play music. He just wants to make sets. He wants to be involved in these events, and he will put 120% of himself into anything he's involved with. So if he's not involved in whatever event you're throwing, you're doing yourself a disservice, in my opinion.
When he started, it was funny because he was so amped just to be involved.
Yep.
When we're like, listen, man, like, this is new and we can't really pay you much or anything. Mm-hmm. And like, he's like, don't worry about it. I'm like, what's up? Like, what's this? This doesn't happen.
No, it's just him.
Which is crazy. And that's what I'm finding out about a lot of.
He knows if he helps to build it, it'll come.
Yeah.
It'll come. He has a lot of big ideas about where to take.
Yeah.
The collective and do events for the collective.
This is my first time organizing anything like this. So it's an experiment for me in certain ways. But to see what's coming from it is way more than I thought. I mean, I didn't really know. And then,
I've got some big ideas I hold back on, but it's like, I realize that we have to sort of slowly,
yeah, expand. Like roll things out.
The bubble is expanding.
Yeah.
And we're having public energy come through at the Oddity show.
That was great.
And like, just all of a sudden there's people going like, wait a minute. People are starting to realize there's something really fucking special going
on. That's what
here.
I thought was different about when I sent that email to everyone after the show. I was like, something different happened at this one where things seemed to legitimately click.
The Art School of Peterborough coming through. Yeah. And I think part of that is Ramuni.
Yeah.
Ramuni did some, like, she's been really plugging away at trying to get us better media coverage, and she got us on Czechs News. And I think, like, you know, I think that's part of where that comes from, but I think as we become more consistent, like, I don't want to see a month where we aren't doing something here.
Yeah, no, for
on
sure.
On the first Friday. Yeah. Like, that just can't happen. We need to stay in the narrative.
Mm-hmm.
But I really just see our bubble, again,
yeah,
it's increasing gravity. And what happens when you increase gravity? You pull in more satellites.
Right.
And that's the way I see it, is that in my own system, here's me, but okay, so I have these satellites, Cody, and Sheldon, and you, and Hannah, and Pack itself, right? Oh,
yeah.
Well, here we are, double binary system. There we go. We've got a binary system now. We've got two sources of gravity. We're pulling people in. I want my satellites to be the satellites of Pack. I want all of, until we're all within a same system. And let's keep, it can keep growing outwards.
Yeah.
As slow or as fast as it needs to go. Again, like, seeing things like, okay, like, doing the workshops, but like, let's get those workshops on like YouTube. Let's, you know, doing a workshop here. We could do a workshop here. People come in and do it live. And then, you know, we could have channel members who can like contribute a certain amount and then get access to those workshops like a month or two after they happen live. I've got ideas for like parties and charity events, just in terms of like talking to some of the DJs, doing art parties, and, you know, potentially like trying to do some things for charity as well.
Which
pulls in. Yeah. Doing things for charity is wonderful. And I'm just being completely honest. A big reason for doing that is to pull more eyes into the project to see what we're doing.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
You know?
Yeah. But what fuels this? Like, you know, like you started creating art like you are now a little bit later on, right? But what is the, what's the driving force behind all of this? I mean, obviously it's for your well-being, right? But what else? Because you're also contributing not just to yourself, obviously, to what's going on here, right?
Yeah. And I've had some really good, I had some really good conversations this last weekend. I was at the Dark Descent event run by Otana Beats, which was a renegade party. I connected with a lot of people there. And there were people there that I met who were like, yeah, what's going on over there with the Arts Collective?
Right.
Like, well, come through and find out.
Yeah.
You know, like that, my big thing now is like people who say they want to be involved is like, well, I've got an idea. I could talk to you about it all night, but what I want you to do is show the fuck up. You show up, then like show up. Cool. Let's talk to Jason. Let's figure out how you can get involved. Again, like, having Ryan here at the last show, Purden, DJ Purden.
Yeah.
That's a big thing for me. The Otana Beats people are, they're all amazing. Really, it's truly like a group of, that scene, which I've been involved in since I was 15, like it's been 30 years I've been involved in going to parties, electronic music parties and dancing and house music and all that kind of stuff, is that is like as close to the hippie scene as I can think of. It's a bunch of people that are just filled with love for what they do. They just want to live in a better place, in a better space, and create how they create. So,
yeah. Well, in
terms of what you were asking though, like in terms of like creating, like everything I've ever done in my life, moving from say like 16 or 17, 18, whatever forward, has been about, I will do this restaurant job. I will do this to supplement my art. And I was involved in different artistic programs. Like I was a performance artist. I, I've done all sorts of different things artistically, and that's because I chased after government initiatives. There was Youth at Risk initiatives in the early 2000s, where I was involved in something called the Doorways Project in Lindsay, where it was a group of youth at risk who were being taught by two, quite honestly, master level artists who were complete weirdos. And there were problems with that program, but like I learned Afro jazz and gumboots and contemporary dance, and I learned how to play hand drums from a master drummer, somebody who literally had like arts degrees in percussion. And I learned how to play hand drums from him, and like learned how to write drumming notation, learned how to put on, like, we created a performance that was stage combat and dance and putting together a giant sculpture that was made out of all found materials. And like, this is in the early 2000s, this is way ahead of its time. And so I kept chasing after things like that. I would look into like, where are more of these projects? How can I get involved in them? And my visual art, which is sort of the main thing that I do now, was always just meant as a way to hook people into my writing.
Right.
Writing is my most important thing. I have over 100 journals just filled with poetry and observations. And like, I have the story of my life since I was 16 years old. I have everything I've ever written.
Yeah.
And it's just, I have my own life story documented. I can look back and read like a weird cryptic poem and go like, oh, I remember this. I was here with this, with these people doing this thing.
So that's what I was getting at. It's because yesterday, my friend Michael was here. He'll kill me for, he likes Michael, not Mike. He's a drummer, professional drummer. He works for Yamaha. He's in Vancouver right now. He flew out this morning to do stuff. So like we had a discussion about how just going after it, like just going after it. He kind of like broke his way into a situation where it gave him tons of opportunity, a place he wasn't supposed to be. He broke in anyway, showed them his music book, and it just, one thing led to the next, right? So I would say that's the most underrated thing. Is we were talking about resiliency, right? Like, you know, making sure that you train yourself over time to be able to come back from whatever it is you're going through, which I know you've done. And breaking your way in and not, it sounds cliche, but not giving up and not.
Yeah, no, I for several years, like I've been pushing at this for 10 years, but there are periods where I just went completely dead. And it's because I have a fucking instant gratification problem. And that's part of the, like the ADHD thing. It's part of my neurology, but that's part of why I do the meditative work, is to just like, just keep going, man. Just keep going. I'm a part of something right now that is moving. And I know, humble brag, I know that I am central into what's going on at PAC, and that's hugely important to me.
Yeah. It's true.
And that has helped me, that has given me a sail that keeps my boat moving.
That's
so
awesome.
So to speak, right?
I love that.
And so instead of paddling like mad and then going like, where am I? Fucking nowhere. Gah! Instead, it's like, where am I? Oh, the boat's still fucking moving. So yeah. you better figure out a way to keep moving with it. And that's been a huge part in my continued presence and in making sure I made the adjustments to keep going. And like, I know my art is valid. I know that I have, what I do is completely unique to me. Nobody does what I do. My art has been cultivated over 20 years, 25 years. My art has evolved and shifted and changed. And when you all come to the Flying Mind on November 4th, you will see that. You'll be able to see, look at this stuff he did 20 years ago. Look at the stuff that he's doing now. It's completely different. I can look at my body of work and say like, hey, I made a joke with Nick. I thought of bringing, like, I have a bunch of pieces I did at one time and they're all blue. And I was like, oh, that's my blue period.
Yeah.
It's Picasso. Look at that.
Yeah.
And like just being able to see that, shift and evolution in my art. And I'm lucky enough, because I've pushed through this stuff, I have friends who are extremely talented artists. Look up Matthew Alexander George on Instagram. He's an insanely talented friend of mine who's been doing stuff for 20 years, does this amazing, like, sort of 60s sci-fi stuff that's amazing. Seraphis Creations, Saraphis Creations. She makes amazing models of dinosaurs, did these, like, awesome dragons. And Sarah, who probably would just be going beet red that I'm mentioning her. So there, yeah, that's Matt's, his, so there you can see some of his drawings there, the pages. But he also does this, the amazing airbrushing of, like, little BattleTech models. And
sweet. He has a line quality like yours a little bit.
He's brilliant. He really is. He did a lot of airbrush stuff. I've got a piece of art on my wall that he gave me 20 years ago. That's still one of my favorite pieces. Very Geiger-esque. Yeah, so Matt and who I called Giorgio, but Matt and Sarah, like, they have been a constant source of keep, like, pushing me forward. If not for the two of them, I may have given up a long time ago. And they continually push me forward by having these two people I consider to be so monstrously talented, who just, it's Saraphis Creations. Two monstrously talented people that constantly bolster me and share my work and tell me that what I'm doing is valid and beautiful. And to have two people that I respect their work so much just constantly bolstering me.
Yeah.
I mean, I have Sarah and her husband, Josh, who's one of the best friends anybody could ever have.
Look at that stuff. That's cool.
Yeah, and she makes all of that by hand.
What?
She's been tapped by Drumheller, the museum out there. She's sold the, like, her dinosaurs are, almost all of them are anatomically correct.
That is fucking nuts.
Yeah,
look at
isn't
that.
It? It's amazing work. And if you scroll down, all the way down real fat, like, after you, yeah. That's like
that.
Some of her dragons and stuff. Like, if you scroll all the way down, she's got some, like, burnt paper stuff. It's like sepia toned. She's just amazing. And yeah,
that's next level. I can't,
and to have someone who does that level of stuff being like, Nick, I love your work. It's amazing.
That's, at our, their kids, the summer camp. I'm like, I try to make one of their wireframe sculptures. It just didn't happen.
Yeah, so
I can't
she makes
imagine.
All these with, like, super sculpy, and some of them are, like, this big. They have this amazing intricate detail. But she has been a booster of mine, and her husband.
Crazy. Look at the tiger.
Saber-tooth
tiger.
They've been people who have said to me, like, oh, if you're in a position where you don't have enough money to buy your supplies, we'll buy them for you.
Wow.
Like, we'll make sure you have the stuff to do what you do. And
that's cool.
It's things like that that just give, like, how can I not have the energy to carry forward when I have people like that boosting me?
Yeah. I think there needs to be way more of that out there. Like,
that's why I share the art that I share.
Yeah.
You know, when people from PAC, when they post stuff, I feel bad now because I know there's people that I miss. I know there's some, I'm like, who am I missing? Like, I don't want to seem like I'm focused on, like, just you or just Sarah or just, you know, some people don't post a lot, whatever, but like, it doesn't matter. Like,
no, you still do a ton every day,
you know, and it's
every day.
I feel bad when I don't. It's weird. I feel a little weird when I don't, because I mean, I'm just honest about it. I know that helps me.
Yeah.
I know that, like, there are people, who I've connected with online, where they're just like, hey, I see what you're doing.
Yeah.
Like, literally had, like, there's somebody I follow in from the UK named Just Ghana, and he was just like, hey, I see what you're doing.
Yeah.
Fuck yeah. I'll share your stuff too. You know? And, or a fellow who goes under the tag Inkpocalypse, who does just this amazing, crazy work. And I share his stuff all the time. Don't know him don't know them from Adam. I just see their work. And he's someone who constantly shares and disseminates the art of people that he appreciates, including mine. And so I reciprocate. And
but that support, because
it just helps everybody.
But yeah, and that support, even from, because I'm always so focused on the on kids, like getting this when they're young. Because if you get them when they're young, and you know they're supported from the get, right? That makes a huge difference. So I had a meeting with somebody, my private lesson student's mom. She's going to help organize PAC for youth. So teenagers from, I think we're going to do 13 to 18.
Yep.
And we're going to organize the shows. That's cool. We're going to organize the shows.
Inkpocalypse, like phenomenal creations.
We're going to organize the shows so that they run in tandem with PAC, like the adult. Not the same month. We'll kind of split them up. But if I had that opportunity when I was a kid, are you kidding me? To be a part of an art group and show and in a gallery.
It's hard for me not to look back and go like, where were these fucking things when I was there?
I know.
Like and for a while you can be bitter about that, or you can say, no, I'm just going to be a part of it.
Yeah.
Because I didn't have that thing, I'm going to be a fucking part of that. Yeah. Instead of saying like, well, I didn't have those things and I turned out fine and I had to fight and scrape, and like,
well,
so you want other people to fight and scrape?
Yeah.
Fuck that idea. No. Help people. But help people not to have to fight and scrape.
It's
to
also
get to where you
more
are.
Accepted now than it ever has been. And where that comes from are the parents, right?
Yep.
Parents now are leaning into the arts, and they're not so like blind to the fact that, you know, hey, arts, even if it's not a career, it's really good for you. In so many ways, right?
It's good for your mental health. It's good for...
And we're not getting so much pressure from parents to do something. Kids, like, live your life. Do what you want to do. Make sure you enjoy it and love it, which is a conversation we had yesterday, too. Well, more parents are on board with that now, which is really good.
I think that's also something that, like, scales were tipping that way. And then COVID happened, and somebody just stepped on the art side and just went, like, fuck this slavery shit. Like, stop. Like, I don't want to work in a cube farm. I don't no. Like,
yeah.
I need to do things that fulfill and sustain me, like, on a spiritual level.
Mm-hmm.
Some people get that out of doing, you know, finance and whatever, and that's fantastic. Yeah. We need those people.
That's exactly what he said yesterday.
But that's not me. That's not me.
Yeah.
I've done a million different jobs, and this is the thing that sustains me. And when the autism diagnosis happened and certain things slipped into place, I just went, okay, I'm in a position where I'm in a place that's stable financially. I am, to be frank, fucking poor. But what I'm doing is art every single day. And I don't care if I'm poor.
See, that exact same messaging from the podcast yesterday. Like, nobody, we had this conversation where no one gets into art and says,
I have a roof, I'm fed, and I get to wake up every day and create art.
But nobody jumps into art thinking, I'm going to be rich. That's why I'm choosing. It doesn't happen that way. It chooses you. Like, you choose it. Or it chooses you, and then you run with it or you don't.
So taking that and like looping back into like the like social media narrative of things is that's where I see the people who and I'm not going to call out anyone, like, even though I have names in my mind, but like I see people and they create this amazing art and everything they post is about themselves, and everything they post is their own stuff. And they can take the time to send a thank you for sharing their stuff, but they never share anybody else's stuff. And what I see is they're falling into that trap. There is, in my opinion, there is a false spiritualism being spread in social media apps that tell you, move forward, grind, grind, grind. Nobody else matters. Grind, grind, grind.
Yeah.
Do what you do. What other people are doing doesn't matter. Grind, grind, grind. You do you. Do what you do, and it's bullshit. The grind is a fucking lie. If you aren't working with other people, if you aren't pulling other people into your fold, if you aren't sharing, disseminating, creating community with other people, you will fail. It is extremely rare that you will just post pictures of yourself and your art and never share what anybody else is doing. It's extremely rare that you're going to get anywhere. You will get to a certain point and then you will freeze and you will wonder why you have frozen and wonder why you're not increasing and whatever. And it's because your audience isn't growing. You're stagnating.
Man, it's
you need the influence of these other artists. Like,
no, I'm telling you, it's
I look at things that you do and I say, I want to take pieces of what you do and add those things into my own art. This is why I'm so excited to do things like just doing that poster with Brogan. I want to do more with Brogan. Like, that poster was very directed, had a purpose. There's some, like, Brogan and I are going to do some more stuff. Brogan.draws on Instagram. Like, check out his stuff. He does, like, concert posters and album covers. And I'm honest. I've been completely honest. I want to do album covers. I mean, the stuff that I do is going to be for a completely different subset of music.
But you can be inspired by
it. You know?
It, and you and can use that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, I could have people that see what Brogan does in terms of, does a lot of, like folk music, like what I would call hippie music, and, like, using quotes from that, and he's done...
He has an insane following. People...
Yep.
He has insane engagement, like actual, like legitimate. It's not just bullshit engagement.
And he's intelligently using that, like, lyrics in music that people love. So the band Camp, I think with two A's, like, he does stuff for them and or does stuff like with their music in mind and has quotes and says, like, hey, give me your favorite quote from this song, then attaches it to the print. I mean, of course, people are going, like, this is art. But it's connecting. It's art that connects with the music that I like. So it's the music that I like, and here's this amazing art, and the music. You know, the musicians that I like are using this art, and it's like this. It's a circle of it's a reciprocal thing, and I mean that's part of me adding my words into my art as well. Was a lot because of looking at what Brogan does, and thinking like, hey, this is what I used to do. I used to put my poetry directly into my visual art. Why did I stop that? Like, let's get back to that. Let's figure out how we can do that in some new ways.
But you're exactly right when you say, like, in drawing in community. So I hit a certain point in the stuff I was doing where, to be honest, I wasn't being fulfilled. Like, I would still keep doing the work and getting the jobs and doing the work, getting the jobs. And then I was like, listen, this is becoming more tedious than it should be for someone who's doing this full time as a career. Like, I should be loving every second. When I started doing PAC and I started reaching out more to community involvement stuff, that's when things started to get, that's when my head started to get straight.
Instead, like, of watching ticks, all of a sudden you see an exponential bloom.
I was able to, like, instead of not only did it make my work better, and I was more engaged in what I was doing professionally, like, this other stuff made it so much richer, so much better, right? Like, you guys around, it's just made things exponentially better, right? Like,
yeah,
just having everyone together.
It's fuel. Like, again, like, I've seen stuff where, like, we've had people involved in the group shows, and when you post stuff, if you take posts and it's the whole show,
yeah,
and you're showcasing everybody and you do a video and you go, oh, here's this person's art, here's this person's art, here's this person's art. Look at the engagement on those posts.
Yeah.
It's massive. And, like, I mean, I hate, in some ways, like, I'm not a fucking social media guru in any way. What I do is pretty simple. Share, tag, done. But then I see posts from some of those group shows and it's like, here's a picture of my stuff. And I'm just blocking out everything else that's at this show.
Right.
You're just, why?
Shooting yourself in the foot a little bit.
It frustrates me.
Yeah.
Like, maybe there's people who are looking at your stuff going like, do I want to go just to see that? Nah.
Yeah.
And then they see everything else and then they come through and it's like, wow.
Yeah.
Thank you're the person who brought me into this. So, like, you're their portal into that bigger world.
Yeah.
Which makes their appreciation for you bigger and better.
Exactly.
Like, oh my God, it's not just you. You're working with this whole group of people.
Yeah.
One of the first times we had a show, like, I think it was Catherine Lestart. Catherine last. I always say Lestart because the way I looked at her. At
right,
her
right, right. Yeah.
But I had a couple of people who came in that in one of the first shows I was involved in and just say, like, you seem to be what the room is spinning around. And I'm like, whoa, wait, what?
Yeah.
Again, it's people picking up on that energy. I don't just stand here and direct people to my own stuff. I talk about everybody else's art, right? Like,
yeah.
You know, it's...
Oh, 100%. It's about, well, we're a collective for a reason.
And art is fundamentally about community.
Yeah.
And if you're trying to stand alone in, like, anyway, we've been over that.
Yeah.
But, like, yeah, I mean...
No, I get it. I get it. 100%. So we are now at 3:08, and I'm going to be late picking up my daughter from school. So, no, it's all good. So thank you, sir, for coming.
Thanks for having me. It's been an interesting experience.
Anyway, Autism Ontario. We're gonna talk about that because I think there's value in having you in to talk to the kids to be like, listen, this is what's up.
Hey, I am you.
You can do this shit, right?
Yeah, but it's also I am you. Like they are me, I am them.
Yeah,
in a lot of ways.
Awesome, man.
Jason. I love you, man.
Love you, too.
And, hey, last little thing.
Yeah. Oh, the show.
November 4th, 6 to 10 p.m. right here at the Jason Wilkins Factory. Check out The Art of Spy Poet on Instagram. You can find my post pinned to the top of my page. Click on it. Get a reminder. Show up. DJs. Art.
Good
Not
times.
Just by me.
Good times.
We'll have some special guest stars. It'll be a fantastic night. Come on out. Talk to me about pack. Talk to me about art.
Wicked. And we'll get this out before the show, obviously. And wicked. Goodbye, everybody. Thanks, Nick.
Much love.
We here at the JWF Podcast wish you and yours the very best of days ahead.